السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام.
Welcome back to another episode
with Layla and Sarah.
Break it down.
Yeah,
let's go. Okay. Well, the last time we filmed was right before my birthday, I think, صح?
Oh, wow. That was so long ago.
It's a month ago.
Exciting times, guys. You're in for a real treat.
Over a month ago, for sure. So you're traveling for 2 months and then... I was gone for 21 days.
21. Layla and I have this running joke where anytime, and actually it's more often than not, anytime we have a situation that happens where we have to say the number 21, I mean, how many times has it happened this last week?
It
happened
lot.
Like 7 times this week. So I'd be like, oh, I don't know, like the 21, like 21st of April, and she'd be like, 21. And it would just, and we'll do a little jiggle in the middle of, you know, the mall.
Literally.
Yeah.
We were at the checkout at Lime and we were just like,
Anyhow.
So you're traveling for 2 months.
I am.
And then I'm leaving again on the 28th for a week. And then I come back for a week and then I go away again. But by the time I come back, you're already gone. So
that's pretty much it. Yeah. Like kindred spirits, we are two ships passing in the night.
I'm tearing up a little.
Yeah, you should. No, it's like, so Layla and I have been joined at the hip for quite some time now.
Yeah.
And this was the first time that I had like separation anxiety because she was gone for so long and I didn't have anyone to go to lunch with. So I was literally just eating by myself. I don't know if I told you this. I went to the restaurant like 2 or 3 times by myself and everyone looked at me like I was some loner that had no friends and thought that I was being stood up.
Little do they know.
That I have one friend.
That you're like the best friend ever. But also, I think they're just staring at you because you look majestic.
I really don't.
No, she does. When I'd be sitting, for example, at Tasha's waiting for you the few times that I arrived before you, when
girl,
she walks in,
lies you tell,
with her bombshell hair,
it
and
is
her
haram to lie.
Cut jeans.
You just, it's haram to
and
lie.
And then you take off your glasses and like,
Clark Kent Superman situation.
It's lovely.
Well, you know what? You know what is lovely? Us sitting down, finally getting a chance to do another podcast because we have been raving about this moment for quite some time and I'm excited to know how you're going to go about this conversation.
I don't know. I sent the followers, my one and only, my people. I sent them, I didn't send them. I posted a story to send in their podcast questions and it's safe to say that we have many. Like, God bless your souls. Like, there's a lot, you know? But I will say, a lot of y'all keep asking me the same... Maybe it's the same things. A lot of them ask me the same things all over again. But I screenshotted a few, and then we'll see how the conversation naturally evolves. Okay, wait, my mom's messaging me that she misses me. Can we... Hi, mommy, habibi. I miss you too, but I'm filming a podcast هلأ مع سارة بالبيت فبحكيكي بس أخلص. Love you. Alrighty. So I took some screenshots. Are you ready?
I'm born ready.
What's the best skill for women to master when it comes to relationships?
I think you should lead on this one.
No, I think you should lead.
You are asking the wrong person and you are barking up the wrong tree.
What's the best skill for women to master when it comes to relationships? Submission.
That's what it is. And listen, I feel like people get this wrong. Whenever you talk about the idea of submitting to a relationship, the first thing that they do is jump up, rip their shirt off, screaming, yelling, beating their chest, being like, why are you doing this? Why should we submit? We are women. We are strong. We are alpha. No one is discrediting your alpha female boss bitch energy, you know?
I am.
Can we swear? No, we're not going to swear.
It's fine.
Yeah.
B-I-T-C-H is, it's okay.
But
we are discrediting that energy.
No, we're not. Because we are, like, Layla. Okay, just to give context for people who don't know, but I'm sure you guys all know, you and I are independent women. We are very self-sufficient. We do
against
our own
my
thing.
Own will.
I know. We follow the beat of our own drum. We have become this way due to a reactionary desire to be the very person that wasn't modeled to us growing up. So because of that, we lead with our masculine energy. Because of that, we work really, really hard and we push forward with this strong, vivacious, assertive, disagreeable personality. But it doesn't work in our favor because the men that are trying to approach said person, that's the first thing that they see. So they're like, I don't want to go near that. So the submission is submitting not to the man, it's submitting to yourself, allowing yourself that relaxation, submitting to God, allowing yourself that there is a greater and higher purpose and a greater and higher power that you don't necessarily need to constantly always be the one and only that has to lead the charge. Someone else can do it. Someone else can lead.
I agree, but that only happens when a man allows you to let go and be submissive, because no one's asking you to go submit to any Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Of course. Right?
Because that's just ridiculous.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate that more often than not, we see that women submit to the worst kind of man, to the man who will take advantage of that, to the man who will use that and not appreciate it, not feed into it, not create a safe space for it, all of those things. But when I talk about a woman submitting, I agree with you. It's first and foremost to God, but it's, you don't just submit to any Tom, Dick, and Harry. And the first person who shows you a little bit of attention and says, oh, you look good, because I could throw a rock in any direction and hit 10 guys who are going to be somewhat interested in you. Interest isn't a metric, but his ability to earn you, his ability to be consistent, his ability to be a man of his word, his ability to show you the beauty of God in this dunya and hold your hand while you guys both have your independent journeys, but also together. If you find a man like that, if you're lucky enough to find a man like that, of course you should submit. Because what is the alternative? What is the alternative of not submitting? Are you fighting for the title of leader?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to fight mm-hmm. that battle. I don't want to fight my man on who's leading this household. Habibi, lead? I'm going to sit down and eat my grapes. But that's why when I say submit is the best thing a woman can do in a relationship, because think about it, what is the alternative?
Absolutely.
You know?
No, I know exactly what you mean. And you and I always speak about this. It's like, if you are in a relationship where you're butting heads with your partner because you are leading with that masculine energy, he will not see you as a partner. He will see you as a competitor and therefore will try to compete against you. And it's both of you guys beating each other's chests that he'll undermine you. He'll undercut you. Why? Because they are naturally bred to be competitive. They are driven by this idea that, like, okay, I need to master something.
Yeah.
And that mastering, that submission is that you trust me enough in this safe space that we're trying to create for ourselves to allow me to lead, and then I allow you to flourish. And a lot of the time is that women don't trust these men because they don't feel safe with these men. And so it's like, of course, if you do it to any Tom, Dick, and Harry, you're going to be like, you don't trust that guy, and he hasn't earned your ability to submit.
Agreed.
And it's like, so if a woman submits from day one or day dot, what has she told him? She told him that she has no boundaries.
Vulnerable.
Exactly. That the metric by which she measures herself is next to none. That he doesn't have to earn anything with her. That there is no gradual escalation to the relationship. That is just a flat line. And like, whatever you say goes. It's like, it's the same concept as women who put out on the first date. Or it's like women who give themselves so freely in relationships without realizing that that's their only currency that they can latch onto.
The worst part is that when I've just had this conversation with many women, and they'll be like, yeah, so what if I put out early? Or so what if I did this? Or so what if I did that? And what they're refusing to understand, and I've made it this very clear, and I was like, I'm going to hold your hand while I tell you this. You do not understand how the male brain works. And it's not to justify how the male brain works, but facts are facts, you know? And why are you denying the man the right to chase you, to court you, to put in effort, to earn you, to take his sweet time? Make him sweat for it. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you denying him that? All in the name of, oh, because what are you competing for? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you competing to be him? You know? So it's either you give him what he wants way too soon, and that could be either emotional, spiritual, physical, whatever it is, and then you end up regretting it because you're like, what happened? I really liked him, but you changed the whole thing around to suit your insecurities and your needs and your desires, and you're refusing to understand, like, how it's biologically embedded in both of us, how we're meant to approach and receive one another. And you're taking that away from him. Why are you taking it away from him?
I agree with you. And I also agree, and I'll add to that fact of, like, most people, and this is not for everyone, because there's always going to be that outlier in the comment section, was like, well, I met my husband, we've been married for 25 years, and I put out on the first day, actually within the first 5 minutes. Congratulations, Jessica. I'm so happy for you. You know, like, felicitations. But that's not always the case. That is the exception to the rule. A lot of the times, the very thing that he loves about you from the first day is the very thing he's going to hate about you when you guys break up. Because he's going to be like, well, you put out on the first date. How do I know you're not going to put out for the next person?
Yeah.
The fact that she did it for me, how many other people has she done it with?
Yeah.
And that's the way that they think. It's the idea that, like, that's why whenever we have this argument of, like, these, like, kind of, like, bros or alpha men that turn around where they're like, I want a woman's body count to be so much less than a man. It's not because they're trying to compete of who can have a higher body count. It's the fact that the idea of men having access to women so effortlessly, and it's something that is not earned, it disgusts them. It doesn't mean that they're not filthy in their own way.
Yeah.
It just means the way that they perceive women from a biological and rational perspective from a male's brain is like, I don't want to go there because she's like some other guys.
Everyone's been there.
Everyone's been there. And that's why, I mean, it's also really weird with people like Bonnie Blue. It's like, you know, we were like, oh, someone like Bonnie Blue can like have 1,000 men in her in like one day. But then when you think about it, the men that are actually standing in line are the most degenerate form of men that you will ever meet in your entire life, because they have no self-worth and no self-respect. And they think that by gaining this as a novelty or gaining this as a chink in a notch in their belt,
yeah,
they've somehow won or succeeded.
Yeah.
So these are not the men that you want to associate yourself with.
No, for sure.
So we're using a very specific archetype when we're talking about men.
Yeah. We're talking about the man that they want. If you, here's the thing that kind of stresses me out a little bit when it comes to this concept. I have heard many a time women describe that 1% of 1% rare breed of a man that they want, deserve, and khalas, like, this is my standard and I'm not accepting any less. But they, unfortunately, refuse to change their ways to be the woman who deserves that kind of man. And it's not to say they are any less worthy, but you're asking for a man who has gone above and beyond to follow the most righteous path. That kind of man, what kind of woman is he going to be into, mm-hmm. you know? So it's a tale as old as time, is everyone wants the right person, but no one wants to be mm-hmm. the right person for said right person.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, sometimes they're lucky enough to encounter such a person, but then they want to change him to fit their ideology of how he should approach them, what he should accept and not accept, how he should treat them, what she's allowed to do and not allowed to do. And mm-hmm. it's like, no, you can't tell me. Mm-hmm. It's like, but you're asking for a man who has gone through hell and back. Like, you know what I mean? Has sweat to get to where he is. And then you don't want to allow him to be that man.
Mm-hmm.
Make it make sense.
No, I can't make it make sense because it's true. And it's the same way that I feel about women. Like, okay, ladies, we never date for what's right for us. We date with our complexes. Why? Because if you ask any, you drop a pin and you ask any woman, what do they look for in a man? A man who's nice, who's funny, who's compatible, who has a great heart, who loves his family, who does this, who has a relationship to God, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. How many of them have dated that said man?
No.
Why is it that everyone has the same archetype they have in their head, and yet the guy that you dated, Rachel, is not that guy? I'm just going to use Rachel. It's usually Janice for me. But you didn't date that guy.
Yeah.
You said that you wanted literally your top 10 non-negotiables or top 5 non-negotiables that you said to me is the exact same as Alia and Miriam, and I don't even know who. It's the same person. Yet, why are you picking the worst, most misogynistic, most narcissistic man? Because there is so much inner work that you haven't dealt with yourself, and you don't want to hold yourself accountable, or you don't want to hold your feet to the fire, and yet you expect the guy to do the same?
Yeah.
It's like, it makes sense in the way that you said.
Yeah.
It's the way that it's even with the logic where it's like, where a man's like, oh, I don't want a woman who is like slightly overweight. I don't want a woman this. And they're like, I can't believe that you want that. It's like, would you date a short man? And all of them would say yes, but it's like, would they? Would they actually?
No, they wouldn't. But I have friends who have been asked out with someone who wasn't as tall as they wanted. And it's the first thing. They'll be like, he's sweet, he's kind, he's approached me in the right way, he wants to take me out, he's like not making me uncomfortable, he's doing all the right steps, but khalas, asir, he's short.
Yep.
So it's, you know? But that I agree, this whole thing, if a man says he doesn't want a woman who's overweight, girls get their knickers in a twist. But then they, have you seen a girl's list? And by the way, I'm not discrediting all women. I have a list. But we were talking today at lunch and you were saying how hard I am on myself.
Yeah.
I know what I'm asking for. And I keep telling you, I need to fix this, because if I want a man who does this, then I in kind need to do the same. Because it doesn't make sense to ask for what I am not.
Oh, absolutely.
You attract what you are. So I can't be asking for ABC when I'm XYZ. It will never happen. The universe and the frequencies will never align in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also very narcissistic and egotistical to just sit back, ask for the best of the best of the best that God has to offer in humanity, when I myself am not allowing myself to be the best that God put me on this earth to be. Absolutely. It's extremely narcissistic. And it's very detrimental to society, because when you have one or two people who have done that, fine. But now you have the majority of society who is asking for the heaven and the earth. You know what I mean? And they themselves are somewhat guttural, not in a guttural sense, but guttural.
No, I agree with it. I think it's just, before you can even have the conversation about a relationship, you have to look yourself in the mirror and actually have the honest conversation. Are you at the level that you are requesting of that partner? Because energetically, you're only going to attract the type of energy that you put out into the universe. And if you are a subpar person that is mediocre at best when it comes to the way that you conduct yourself, the way that your morals, where your moral line is, where your ethical compass is, obviously you're going to be attracting that type of person. And this is to say, like, a lot of these women, let's just say, you're a woman who's on her dean, who's very respectful, who isn't going out till the late hours of the evening and like wasting her life away, who's very attractive, who's humble, who's this, who's all of these things. And you're like, where is that person? Why have I not found said human being? It's because you still need to elevate that consciousness. You still need to get to that stage where you are ready to receive that person. God is telling you, you're not ready yet. Relax. It'll come. Because you've even said this to me. It's like, there's no greater time than God's plan. There's no greater time than what God has designed, decreed for you. So if you're sitting there wallowing in your misery that you haven't found the right person, there is a reason. For me, I am so thankful that God has not brought the person into my life a month ago, a week ago, 10 months ago, because I wasn't in the right headspace. And it's like, as time is moving forward, every now and again, I'll go like, come on, like, where is he? Like, TikTok. But at the end of the day, it'll happen when it needs to happen. And if you truly believe in God and you truly believe in the plan that God has for you, you wouldn't even doubt it for a second. Because who are you to doubt that? Who are you to sit in that doubt and that questioning and that moment of lack of conviction that it's going to happen for you? So I say with all these like girly pops who are listening, wait, your time is coming. Just you wait. But know that it's not happening for a reason, my friend. It's not happening for a reason.
I'll add to that because you're saying about the God part. And this is a concept that I've been thinking about recently and it somewhat terrifies me. How doubtful people are of God when they doubt his judgment and his timing and his plan and why things are transpiring in the way that they are in their life. And especially these women that message us about, what am I doing wrong to attract the right partner and so on and so forth. If you are doubting God, if you come approach God with that energy and that mentality, at the stage you're at, God help the man you end up marrying. Because if you approach your creator that way, how are you going to approach your man? How are you going to approach your approach your husband, the father of your children? You know, if you're doubting Allah, what have you left for your husband? شو خليتيله?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So this is why I'm very careful, especially, and by the way, this happens even with my friends and family, when I hear how they speak of God, certain words, I really tell them to tread lightly, because if you think that way of God, God knows what you think of me.
Yeah.
You know, because I am no greater. It's just not, I cannot be better to you than God is to you. And this is something, I really appreciate my mom for this, tremendously. And my mom is a mama bear. She will go to war for her kids. She's always been known amongst her friends as the woman who, like, no one touch a hair on my children's head. I will go feral, like, get my mugshot ready. And we were sitting once and she was talking to me and she was like, you see how much I love you? I was like, yeah. She's like, do you see how much I'm willing to do for you? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, على قد ما بحبك. How much I love you. God loves you more. And that's the only time I've ever heard my mom even approach the idea or the concept of anyone loving us more than her, because she refuses. She's like, even you as siblings, there's no way you love each other more than I love you. Mm-hmm. Your father doesn't love you as much as I love you, and I will give her all of that. But she was so calm, and she was even with a smile on her face, she was like, but God loves you more than I could ever possibly love you. Mm-hmm. And that to me is just, if I want to give anyone the benefit of the doubt, and all of these girly pops giving their ex-boyfriends the benefit of the doubt in their situationships, you don't give God the benefit of the doubt? Like, if there's anyone who has proven and is worthy of that, it's God, you know? But
okay, well, with that being said, I would ask you the question then, well, then when it comes to God testing you, whether you're ready, how do you approach that? Because I'm sure that we have a lot of tests out there.
I know what you're talking about. Fail and we rise again.
We have tests thrown our way all the time.
Yeah.
And we don't even realize, sometimes we don't even realize it's a test.
I agree.
And we're just like, oh, here it is. Here it is. And God is going to throw the very thing that you're tested. It's like, I'm going to test you again. I'm going to test you again. I'm going to keep testing you until you mess up. So speak on that. Pray tell.
I will say one thing. If you keep failing a test that God sends you, not only does he send it again, but it gets harder and harder each time. truly. And before you know it, you're 50 and you're still making the same mistakes. I fully believe that in order to grow, you have to pass the tests that God sends your way. And sometimes they're redundant and they're repetitive, and you could pass it and it comes back again. Because just because you passed it once, it doesn't mean you're not prone to being vulnerable or falling off the wagon again, as we all do. But I think the key is in getting back up. So failing a test is fine every now and then, even though I have preached many a time, like, but how many times can you repeat the same mistake? And I still stand by that. I'd rather you not repeat the same mistake five times. Once, twice is okay. But then at some point, you're no longer a victim. You're an active participant in your own demise, you know, to your own detriment. But recognizing how weak we are and allowing ourselves to get back up, you know what I mean? I also think we don't falter. We don't even falter without God's permission. You know, and maybe sometimes it's just the little kick in the butt. You need to go back to him even harder, which I'm so okay for. Mm. Like this recent test that I failed, it brought me back to God even harder. So, you know, that's by his grace and by his mercy. So, alhamdulillah, what can I say?
Alhamdulillah. Next question.
What about you?
Lord knows.
Besabiso and I are listening very attentively.
I don't know. I just feel that God uses tests in a way to humble you and to shape you into the person that he wants you to become. Because I think, and this was something that you and I had spoken about even just a couple of days ago. If I had gotten married 10 years ago, I would have probably been a person that was so docile and complacent in a very shallow and superficial relationship that would have stand the test of time out of my own ignorance and my inability to see and self-reflect and post-rationalize.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought in my early 20s that I knew everything. Yeah. I was like the ringleader of knowledge and understanding and wisdom.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything. And the fact that I'm able to grow and self-reflect and elevate myself in a way that allows for that emotional intelligence and emotional awareness and being astute and really, really focusing on who I am and how I move through this world has really helped me shape the type of person I want to be and the person that I'm becoming. So all of the things that I've experienced in the last 10 years, even 15 years,
yeah,
I mean, were blessings, were little tiny nuggets of wisdom that God was throwing my way, being like, you cannot be that person if you were going to be in a relationship. This is not to say that I was going to get married 10 years ago. I'm just saying, hypothetically speaking.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
And that now, only now, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready now. And granted, for the listeners out there, I'm 35.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe there are people out there, and Lord knows how many friends I have that are 35 and have three children already. For me, being
35 and divorced.
Well, 35 and divorced with three children. You know what I mean?
Everyone has their journey. I agree. But it's reminding me, because of what we said also about the tests and stuff, there's that quote or that saying that goes along the lines of, there are graveyards filled with people who thought they had another tomorrow. You know? So that's the only thing that scares me with failing a test that God or the universe sends me many a time again, is because this, I don't want to fall victim to the mentality of tomorrow's a new day. Tomorrow's a new day is a beautiful concept if you genuinely grasp the magnitude of what it is to be alive and to have this day and what a blessing it is. Because we see every day that not everyone has a tomorrow to live, you know? So I think that's the thing that just maybe sets me aback a little, is that I've always said I refuse to meet my God a coward, but I don't want to meet him ungrateful. You know, I don't want to meet him having taken advantage of the gift that he's given me, which is this life.
Absolutely. But you also have to bear in mind that even the things that we're so afraid that we're going to meet our creator with, we also have the blessings that we can meet the creator with. I mean, the creator is the almighty, forgiving, all knowing, all seeing everything. And I feel like it's really interesting when we have these conversations, because it seems like when you and I speak about it, it's always going to the negative of like, I don't want this to be like the negative that's going to, I don't want this to be the, let's say, the marker in the tally of like the, let's say, the haram versus the halal, that I end up going, let's just say, to hell versus me going to heaven. And it's like, you could do one thing that's going to set you going down the path to hell. And you can do one thing that's going to set you to the path to go to heaven. And there are so many stories that we know where this allow this person to go to heaven and this thing allowed to go to hell.
I agree. And it's not about being negative or always being, because I know I say I refuse to meet my God in usually in like a negative sense, but it's because I know the good that I've done. You know what I mean? I know the things that I'm doing well in life, and I'm not here to preach about those. The more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And the better I get at certain things, the more it makes me, subhanAllah, I really think it's just God leading me in the right direction. He's like, okay, we've done this. Now let's repair this. Let's amend this. Let's nourish this. Let's, you know, fix these areas. Because I never want to plateau. A spiritual growth is a never-ending journey, you know?
But it has peaks and troughs, ebbs and flows.
That's fine. But if the troughs aren't there to serve a purpose of helping you peak again, that's not the right trough you're in.
I know, but... And there it lies the secrets of the universe. I mean, we are filled with peaks and troughs.
And that's totally fine, but it's what you do with the troughs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people succumb to the troughs. A lot of people take their own lives with the troughs. A lot of people go really down a very dark alley and path with those lows when they come. But I, you know, عَسَى أَن تَكْرَهُ شَيْءٌ وَخَيْرٌ لَكُمْ, and perhaps you hate something and it is good for you. The low is here to help me see something more clearly or redefine my path. And I'm so okay with that. Let the low come whenever it needs to come. Alhamdulillah, I handle them much better than I used to. But it has to serve a purpose. I think I live my life like that. It's just that things have to serve a purpose. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
How to deal with a man that literally does not see what he's done wrong and then he turns it around on you.
What type of question is that? Because you know what? I would like to say that that is a rare question. It is not.
It's not.
It's one of the so most frequent. Common things ever.
I agree.
I think a lot of the time, men and women experience emotions very similarly. I just think that men don't know how to release the emotion as well as women do. I think they don't know how to process it and they don't know where to set it, in what direction. So we ultimately have men that like to lack accountability, that don't want to take ownership of the responsibilities that they take in a specific two-way dynamic, or they don't. And you end up making excuses for someone who doesn't make excuses for themselves.
Yeah.
And women often not like to tell the story on behalf of a man. Like, maybe he's busy. Maybe he's got things going on. Maybe he does this. Maybe he does that. Did he say that? He didn't say that. You said that,
yeah.
So... women tend to fall into the trap of being the mouthpiece for a lot of these men. So they're going to take advantage of that time and time again. So of course, a man who's going to turn it around on you is a classic narcissistic move where they don't want to be accountable for their actions and they want to gaslight you into thinking that you are the problem so that they don't have to be the problem.
I also think if he goes on the defense immediately or on the offensive and he like tries to turn it on you, he does not care so much for the communication part of this relationship or your feelings or takes you into consideration at all. He's immediately in PR damage control of his ego and his image and where he stands in this relationship. And that's just not a kind of person you want to be around.
Absolutely not.
That's not my cup of tea personally.
But isn't it so funny that the people that ask you about these questions, they are hoping that you're going to give them a get out of jail free card, that you're going to somehow rationalize the irrational, that somehow you're going to make sense of something that makes zero sense from a logical point of view.
Yeah, they want me to make it make sense to them.
Yeah. And that's the thing that blows my mind. It's like you're trying to draw at straws at any excuse to justify and warrant really horrible behavior. And what are we if we are not victims of that type of behavior? We do this all the time. They're like, but maybe like, oh, he stopped speaking to you, he ghosted you. Maybe he's busy. His aunt died. Or his grandma, and like it was...
His grandma's uncle's pet fish.
Yeah, like what was it from the White Chicks, the movie, when she was like, he's going through a really hard time because his grandmother died like 3 years ago. And it was like...
Oh my God.
But it's just like, it's the excuses that you want to give to somebody. But
question. That question... What?
I have a question for you.
Oh. Please, the floor is yours.
How long should a woman wait until it's the right time to be in a relationship or take it to the next level? Because you'll have girly pops that will message you and they've been in a relationship for like 10 years and the guy didn't put a ring on it. And then there'll be girls who are in a relationship for one day and then they're just like, but he ghosted me and he did, like, you have both ends of the spectrum. So I want you to give the girly pops who are listening, what is the actual way to go about it? Because I'm sure there's somebody in the comment section that has asked you, how do I go about this the halal way? I don't want to have to give myself up for the sake of a relationship, even though I wanted to go down that trajectory. How much is too much?
Anything is too much. Anything is too much. As a woman, it is not your job to move it forward. It is not your job to ask, where is this going? It is not your job to set the trajectory of the relationship. It is not your job to set a wedding date. It is not your job to wait for a ring. It is your job to be the most divine woman possible. And it is your job to allow him to be a man when it comes to you. So you need to, forgive me, my girlies, but zip it, take a step back and see how he approaches you. See what he does. Don't give him... But just because he told you, oh, I really want to take you to Paris, don't treat him like he took you on a first-class trip to Paris. He just yapped. He did nothing. You know what I mean? So when it comes to that, specifically with relationships, women need to calm down, take a back seat, and see where he leads you. Keep your wits about you. I'm not saying let him lead you down a very dark road and take you into the deep haunted woods, but see where it's going and have your wits about you. Within a few days, you could know where this is going. Within a few weeks, you can easily tell which type of path this man is leading you down, but you don't take charge. You follow. But when you find yourself, I don't like where we're going, you stop, you get out, you keep it moving. And you thank God for giving you a good head on your shoulders that you were able to spot it. But you don't just fall blissfully without paying attention. And you also don't lead charge. Like, you're not a leader. Also, women who lead, not really good. They've taken us in really bad places. You know? I don't lead. I lead when it comes to my work. Because I have a family to take care of. And a team and that's just do or die. That's sink or swim for me. But to be fair, I don't date, so I don't even know now. But no, I have not met a man who leads. But I will say one thing. Okay. Just because I don't require much, it doesn't mean that I deserve the bare minimum. And I think this is where women get it twisted. Yes, it's so beautiful to be agreeable and to be easy and to be peaceful and to be a man's peace. But you know that saying that angels don't live in hell? So if a man hasn't created heaven for you on this earth, you're not his peace and you're not his angel. And just because you don't require much, because you're such a beautiful, divine, self-fulfilled woman, it does not mean you require the bare minimum. So those are two very different things. So, and say it with your chest. And Adi, walk out. Because اللي خلقه خلق غيره. Like, this is really one of those things where there's plenty of fish in the sea. Plenty.
But daddy, I love him.
That's what is that? Ariel. What was she, 14?
16.
But yeah, I just, no, with the women who ask me this, it is not your job to lead. It is never a woman's job to lead in a relationship. You follow and you submit. And again, submission in the most beautiful way. But you only submit to a man who has earned you. But you need to ask yourself, are you allowing him to earn you? And are you also allowing yourself to submit? You know, is he allowing you and are you allowing yourself? Something isn't adding up if it's not working. Mm-hmm. It's either him or it's you. Figure out which one it is. Keep it moving. Thank you.
Well said. But you want to know something so crazy? And I mean, it's not even that crazy when you think about it. But to me, it blows my mind. There are women who are in relationships with people for the last 10 years and they have not submitted to the man. And then they wonder why they're miserable. They're almost, and I say this with my chest, every relationship I have witnessed, every relationship where the woman is domineering and disagreeable and masculine, and I put this in quotation marks for those who are not watching this, and leading more in their masculine energy and wanting to basically play the role of the man, the men that they're in relationships with are so feminine in the way they carry themselves. Not feminine in terms of being like like girly
and flamboyant,
or, yeah. Yeah, and flamboyant. No. They are so passive in the way that they receive information. They victimize themselves a lot of the time. They get overly emotional. They never want to be stoic or righteous or go-getting. They are not solution-oriented. And this is not to say that women are not that. I'm saying, in the conventional sense, if you want to break up like general like behavioral psychology when it comes to the psychology of men versus the psychology of women,
yeah,
they are taking on the role of the psychology of women.
Agreed.
And the women are miserable.
Agreed.
They all, and you know why they're miserable? Because all they do is talk about it with you. They're like, you know, I'm so lucky that like Eric or Richard over there is just like, you know, lets me do all the planning and I pick the places where we go and I pay for everything and I pick the destination of the holiday and I pick. Girl, you have allowed a man to passively reciprocate his love for you for the last 10 years and you're speaking it to me not to convince me of it.
It's to convince yourself.
To try and convince yourself.
Yeah.
And it's not working.
This is the hill I'm willing to die on. All right? Are you ready for
my hill? Say it loud, say it proud.
This is the hill I'm willing to die on. If you've been dating a man for a few years and he has not put a ring on it, he has not made an honest woman out of you, made you his baby mama in front of God, that man hasn't chosen you yesterday, today, or tomorrow. That man will never, never willingly choose you. I said what I said.
Yeah, and this is what we spoke about before. It's even in married relationships. If the man did not pursue you
and choose you,
and
was like
choose
you
with his chest,
with his chest,
he didn't pick you.
Facts.
I can name so many relationships which is like that.
We're thinking of the same people now.
Not even that. It's like the people that I know where. The woman was with child before they got married. The woman forced him or coerced him into, like, emotionally blackmailed him into marrying her, where the woman was very domineering and took the role of the divine masculine energy.
Mm.
The men never pick them and they always cheat. Always.
Always.
Always. That's a hill I'm going to die on.
I'm right there with you. Hmm? I'm right there on that hill, behind you.
And it's crazy because it's like, so I have this friend and she didn't believe in marriage and she's British and you know, for her, like, marriage was not something. Her parents were not married. Her partner's parents were not married either. Oh. So the idea of being married was not like part of the conversation.
Mm.
So she got pregnant. She had two children and then her partner ended up cheating on her with her best friend. And she was so upset by it. And she was like, you know, I don't understand. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. And I was like, he never picked you. He stayed with you because you got pregnant. Both, obviously, she didn't get pregnant. It's not like he slipped and fell. She got pregnant. They had a child. And then in order to keep the relationship going, they had another child in order to save the relationship. And in the end, that didn't even save the relationship.
Yeah,
another, bringing life and bringing a human, like a baby, into this world was not enough to save the relationship. And so guaranteed, I'll put my money on it, the relationships that I see right now where the man didn't pick the woman and he didn't chase her and he didn't pursue her, yes, and he didn't advocate for her and he didn't fight for her,
yes,
and he didn't lead the charge,
yes,
and he didn't go there and conquer, divide and conquer, he will cheat and he will leave her. Mark my words.
Take that to the bank. I'm right there with you.
Yes. So why are you right there with me? Because I know my reasons. What's yours?
I've seen it.
But why do you think the women will allow that? Because some of the times they're just like, well, I just wanted to keep him around and that's why I got pregnant or that's why
It's not that. I see it a lot of the time. I see, because I recognize the fear in myself when I was younger, but I see it now in a lot of women. Once you've wasted 5 years waiting for that ring, what's another five? Mm-hmm. It's very rare to see the girl, after giving so much of herself for years and years and years, going on almost a decade, committed to this man, devoted to this man, and hasn't gotten a ring yet. It's very rare to see her walk away. I've seen a few, and once they've walked away, wallahi, within less than a year, she's engaged. When she walks away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when he walks away, within less than a year, he's engaged to some other girl he just
Absolutely.
Met. Do you know why? Because she required him to marry her, to have access to her. Whereas you gave him 10 years, the best 10 years of your life. And for what? For what?
Exactly.
That's why I'll die on that hill, because I've seen it. Mm-hmm. Babe, do you know how many times, even my mom, I'd be growing up, I'd be a teenager, and my mom would have friends who have daughters who are in the age of marriage, you know, in that range. So they'd be in their 20s, and I was 16. And my mom would tell me the same thing. Masan Sahibti, my friend, Binta, was with this guy for 5 years. But after, like, in Nohalas, the parents got involved, and it's like, you guys have been together for 5 years. They got engaged, but then he ended up leaving her right before the wedding because he didn't choose her. Or for, and then he gets married like a year later. There's another one where I knew people who had been together since high school, university into their 20s, 8 or 9 years together. And then they ended up, like, she's now 28, 29, and he ends up leaving her. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you wasted 10 years of her life. But is it he wasted 10 years of her life, or she allowed him to waste 10 years of her life? Because again, if a man's telling you, I'm going to marry you when I'm ready, but he doesn't actually marry you when he's ready.
No, it's because half of the time the men will say what they need to say and the woman just doesn't want to hear it.
Of course.
Yeah, it's like, did he tell you he wanted to marry you? Did he have that conversation with you?
Did he initiate the conversation?
Did he initiate? It's like, you need to have time. Like, if this is an X and Y axis, you need like time, and then you need escalation. Is there, are we evolving? Is there an upwards trajectory to this relationship?
Yes.
If there isn't, what are we doing this for? It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like, the women latch on to one slither of hope, and then they sensationalize that, and then they glamorize that, and they romanticize that little slither, and they latch onto it for dear life like nobody's business. And that's what keeps them going on. And it's like, so you're not in love with the person. You're in love with the idea of what the person projected onto you for 5 seconds. And because you are so riddled with insecurity and a lack of self-worth and a lack of self-identity, you have no way of gauging what's going on, that little slither of hope is the only thing you could hold on to, because you don't want to prove everyone right.
But it comes out of desperation.
Yeah.
And insecurity.
Yeah.
It's stemming from all the wrong places.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But how many people do you know that are in that situation?
Right now, not so much anymore, because I don't talk to people like that anymore. Mm. I sound cruel, but I don't entertain. I don't surround myself with people like that anymore. It doesn't interest me. Because I would never come to you and be like, hey, I've been with this dude for 5 years. You're going to smack me silly. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's not something I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. So if it's something that I'm entirely uninterested in, and I see a girl, not only is she interested in it, but that is actually her reality in her life, mm-hmm. we have nothing in common. Mm-hmm. Already the base from which we can even approach each other, there is no similarity at all. It's like water and oil. We mm-hmm. cannot have a conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I mean?
So I know, I hear stories, and obviously I know people from university who are still together and not married, but just, I know them in passing now. If I see them, I'll say hi, but not anyone I keep in my inner circle, because I'm not trying to, you are the company you keep. Mm-hmm. As strong as I am, if I surround myself by certain people, it's not even worth the risk of being influenced by it.
Mm.
It's not.
I will say, there are people that have lasted, let's say, 10 years in a relationship, and then they wanted to get married at the end, and it has been successful. And I'll tell you the only, I guess, outlier to that, or the only like anomaly in that equation. One of my friends has been in a relationship for 10 years. Okay. He wanted to marry her since the first day. Literally within the first day, he wanted to marry her. Within a week of them dating, he wanted to fly her out and live like his best life with her. She didn't want to get married. And he waited and waited and waited for her because he wanted to be with her. So he was like, I will take you in whatever form you want. And she was also very lax in the sense that she's like, I don't know if I want to get married. I don't even know if I want to have kids. But he was so dedicated and devoted to her that he did pick her, but it just took a long time to get there. And so I will say, if the man is on an upwards trajectory where he's constantly pursuing you and you are in control, this is what all the girly pops need to know. The men are the sexual protagonists and the women are the gatekeepers. Why? Because you gatekeep that relationship.
But also, I will add to that, I think men are wired to be disciplined. So he was disciplined with that. And women are wired to be devoted. So even though she wasn't sure she wanted to be married, or she was fully devoted to him and the relationship, hence they were together for that long and now are, I'm assuming, blissfully wed. But men are hardwired to be disciplined, as they should be. A man who is indisciplined is very much in his feminine energy.
Okay, then I will raise you for the discipline. What about these dour bros out there that talk about discipline, but yet the one area that they are not disciplined in is with women? What do you say to that? Because that is a very specific image that people are trying to portray
just because,
online.
Just because a man claims to be a man of God does not make him a man of God. Just because a man is out here in these streets claiming to be speaking the word of God and trying to bring people towards a certain religion, it does not make him so. In fact, I've noticed that the more people have a bigger performance to give and the louder they are, the dirtier the skeletons in their closets. And they are some of the most Machiavellian, disturbing, dark, Ted Bundy-esque people to be around. Oh, yeah. And they have no mercy. And if there's one thing I know about at least our beautiful religion, if they don't have that mercy and that moderation and that acceptance and lack of judgment, they are not men of God. And I stand by what I said.
Who is it that we were talking about who was talking, who was like making a statement about them? Who was it? It was...
Chad Bolson.
Chad Bolson.
I love him.
He is... Oh, love that man.
They're doing the very thing that they claim shouldn't be done.
I know, which is hilarious. It makes me chuckle. It makes me chuckle.
It's honestly, it doesn't make me chuckle anymore. It does sometimes because some of their videos are hilarious. But to me, it's just about, and hilarious in a bad way. To me, it's just about, I despise, this is one of the things that like I will go to war for and I really hate it. And you will get a visceral reaction out of me. I hate people who give Islam a bad name. I hate it. If you come off as too condescending, too judgmental, too terrifying, that no one can approach you or talk to you or ask you something or be doubtful or question or just have an eagerness to learn, it makes me so angry. Because who are you to turn a lost soul away from this religion? Who are you? Mm-hmm. Babe, it makes... I don't think you understand how angry it makes me.
Tell me. Express to the masses.
It really, 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 really rubs me the wrong way. Like, it makes me, this is the time where I'm like, I'll Jake Paul this, get a ring, let's fight.
Mm-hmm.
Let's fight. Fight me.
Yeah.
Because I see it in the comments sometimes, like there are certain girls or guys who are new to the religion, mind you that they're either Australian or Irish or Persian or whatever it is, you know what I mean? And they're just documenting their journey. And then you'll hear and then you'll see the comments of Astaghfirullah, brother, this isn't the right. Who are you? Who died and deemed you the new prophet of Allah? I'm sorry. What did I miss?
But isn't that just like the classic conventions of people projecting their own insecurities? Because the people that I find so funny in the comment section, like for example, the people that are asking you where your hijab is are the very people that are like openly OnlyFans on social media.
It's not just that. It's very interesting when people ask me certain things like the hijab or the nails or the video I posted yesterday of me praying with like no socks. I'm sorry, my madhab, because there's the Hanafi, the whatever, my madhab doesn't say wear socks when you're praying. So leave me alone. You know what I mean? And if your madhab says wear socks, ya khayya, wear socks. Mali wa malak. As long as you're praying or I'm praying, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care if your feet show, if your wrists show. If you're meeting God, you're meeting God. Like, that's more important to me. But to tell... When people criticize how you pray, that might be the lowest form of humanity I've ever seen in my life. Especially in Islam. If you see someone trying, and they've gotten up, and they've made wudu, and they've started praying, and you are criticizing, oh my God, that one strand of hair that's showing. Oh my God, your little pinky toe, the little piglet, you know, it showed. And that's what you're looking at. I think you really have to question what kind of cow raised you. God doesn't recruit the flawless. He redeems the fallen. If you are flawless, because there is no one that God made flawless except for the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, but apparently all of you online seem to think you're flawless with all your criticism and your judgment and your trolling and your comments. But if you think you're so flawless, why are you here? Why are you here? Why are you even praying to God? Why are you even bothering if you're so unbelievably perfect? But God redeems the fallen. God gives you a chance and a chance and a chance and a chance to come back. And he never, ever, 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 ever closes that door. There is only the one incident I know religiously where the door, figuratively speaking, was somewhat closing. And it was the Fir'aun. And even if as bad as you think Bibi Netanyahu is today, the Fir'aun is actually the worst, worst, worst person to ever exist in the history of humanity. And when he drowned in the sea after Moses alayhi salam parted the Red Sea, I think it was Jibril alayhi salam who took the dirt and then stuffed it in his mouth just to not give him the chance to YouTube and say the shahada, because that's how merciful God is. But you in the comments think you can come say, oh, you're not wearing socks when you're praying? I don't understand this time we live in. And to give Islam such a bad name because of your ego, this is the one request that I have and the one prayer that I make now and the one comment that I answer back. I hope you meet God with the same energy and words that you've met me in this lifetime. That's all I'll say. So that's what I have to say about that. Got me riled up. Ugh. Yeah, no, I can't deal with these comments. And I'll answer the nails thing. I won't answer on Instagram. I'll answer it here. I don't know religiously what it is. The general consensus seems to be that you shouldn't have a dafit on or nails because the water doesn't touch your nail bud. If it is my one and only vice right now, let it be my one and only vice. I'm working on other things. By the way, mind you, you think I don't pray to God? Like, give me the confidence to feel really beautiful and sexy with my natural nails? Of course I do. You know what I mean? But I'm working on other things right now. And in the grand scheme of things, it is not the thing that matters most to me right now. I'm working on, I wake up a fajr now. That's something I've tried really hard to do for a long time, and now it's finally like been happening. That to me is more important than my nails. So for everyone else, please do everything that God has asked you to do, and then come tell me about my nails.
Yeah. And you know what I find really interesting as well about that comment is that, like, people are always so stuck on this idea of, like, the water can't penetrate the surface of the nail, right? That you have to have access in all areas because you have to cleanse the entire body and spiritually cleanse, et cetera, et cetera.
No.
It's the same concept as people who have veneers, especially the bounding veneers that literally make sure that there is no water that enters, because if it did, you would get infected. You would not be able to, like, you literally are binding it to the tooth. There's no water that can penetrate through. So you can say all these people out there that have veneers, their prayers don't count.
What I know to be true is that when we die and we leave this dunya, we take nothing with us. Nothing, 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 nothing. And I think it's one of the main reasons I have a problem with fillers. I have a problem with certain surgical things, and especially the capitalizing on women's insecurities. I despise it beyond belief. And I just, all of these people who judge, and they judge harshly online because they want us to fit the mold of whatever they look like. But hey, at least when I die, I'm not going to my God with fillers. That's all I'm going to say. Because a lot of these girlies, babe, it's the hijabi girlies, but with the lip fillers. I'm very confused.
No,
and here's the thing. Usually I wouldn't attack you. Do your lip fillers. I have my point of view on it. I wish everybody didn't get them. That's just my personal belief. Mm-hmm. I will never, but that's fine. I understand when people do. You know what I mean? But don't come judging me, because I didn't poke you before you poked me. You know what I mean? That's all I'm going to say. How do you recognize signs from God when you're a little too tone deaf?
I like that question.
Everything's a sign from God. Everything is a sign from God. You can wake up.
What do you mean if you're a little tone deaf? That means that you're actively choosing to not acknowledge?
That's, or you are a little obtuse and just go about your days like things are just random, or coincidental, which we believe nothing's a coincidence and nothing happens at random. I think it's a mindset, and it's you train your mind to start seeing things a little differently. But I really try to be so present and try to look at everything as a sign from God. Mm. Like, us being here is a sign from God. Mm. You know what I mean? Sitting and having this conversation. Even the fact that tomorrow we're going to go have a beach day and God's giving us that day to just go, you know, be blissful under the sun, just you and me. Little things like that, every little thing, even my ability to just drink water, you know? Like, when I drink this sparkling water, I'm like, God, you know? So if you see everything as a sign from God, I think it's a mindset. I think you train yourself. I think it's how you choose to see the things that happen either to you or for you. And I choose to see that everything happens for me and not to me. And that was the biggest shift. When I see that everything happens for me, even if it's so horrible or it hurts, it physically hurts and I want to cry. And I'm wondering, why am I here? But then I look at it and I'm like, no, this is happening for me. And lo and behold, it works out.
Mm. I think with the question, they were saying, like, okay, how can you see the signs when you're tone deaf? That's implying that either you are actively or passively participating in these signs, but you're still participating.
What do you mean?
Because being tone deaf is like, okay, I don't see them. The person is saying that I don't see them, I don't acknowledge them, I don't actively take them in or internalize them. So if you are passively or actively participating in these signs, you're still participating, whether it's actively or whether it's passively, meaning that that person is choosing not to acknowledge the signs. They're being tone deaf. They're choosing not to internalize what God is throwing your way. Yeah. Listen, signs are there all day, every day. And God's going to show you, and God is going to throw a mirror to your face and going to be like, look, there it is. Mm. That's the sign. If you don't want to see it, that's a you problem, my friend. But it doesn't mean it's not there. Yeah. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It's like this idea of, like, when you and I were talking about past friendships.
Yeah.
And you were saying you will never see this person again.
Facts.
You know, The sign that you have never seen that person again is a sign nonetheless. But you could either passively do that by saying like, oh, it's just pure coincidence that I haven't seen that person. Yeah. Or you could actively be like, this is intentionally by design that I haven't been able to cross paths with this person. So it depends on your interpretation of the situation. Flam beige.
I agree. But I really also think, this is also important. So I'm going to reiterate it because I really think this is, it's so, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like skimmed through or we just pass it by. But truly, it's about recognizing that things happen for you and not to you. Even if they're bad, even if they take away pieces of your soul, even if it's a test that you've thought you've overcome and, oh my God, this is happening once more. Just recognize that God is always allowing things to happen for you and it's not to you. And once you make that mental shift, things really change. You see tests as a great experience. You look forward to them. You know what I mean? Your days are more exciting because you approach them with this sense of, I will always be victorious because everything is happening for me and not to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be the beginning of a lot of effective change in your life. Mm-hmm. You know?
And, you know, I found it really interesting. Whenever we talk about these kind of like negative experiences that we've happened, or when life hits us this really horrendous fork in the road, or we've got this peak and trough and we are just not at the peak, we are at the ultimate mother of all troughs. I always say to myself, we always have to humble our understanding of the situation because it could always be worse. It can always be worse.
Of course. And,
there was a woman online, even recently, I saw a video and it really put a lot of things into perspective. She was talking about how the reminder of the privilege that you have, and she used an example of, there is a Quran class where they were learning how to recite Quran. And she was talking about this woman who was having a really hard time because of her cultural background and her ethnic background. Certain phraseology, certain accents, certain diction in the way that she pronounces or enunciates words wasn't aligning with certain letter forms like qaf or ha or ha, you know? And it was really difficult for this person that they spent like 20 minutes trying to get the person to do a qaf. And it reminded me of my own experience that I didn't learn how to speak Arabic until much later in life. The first time I properly spoke Arabic where I was having full-blown conversations was actually in my early 20s. And so I never learned how to properly read and write Arabic. That's why I don't read Quran and write Arabic. And it's something that I really hope to get better at. But it's something that I've really struggled with. And I remember the first time that someone said the word heart outside of the Syrian way of saying it. So elb, you know, like with a But I didn't know it was qalb, you know? And it took me 6 months before I could say qaf. And the woman was, because that hit a sort of a nostalgic nerve in my brain and triggered that memory, was because that person worked for 20 minutes trying to say that one specific letter. And so we, who have the privilege of knowing how to speak Arabic, who have the privileges of enunciating certain words, we don't realize how much privilege that we can. So I can sit here and wallow in my misery being like, I don't know how to read Arabic. I guess it's like a lost cause for me. Like, woe is me. Let me cry myself a river. But there are people out there who can't even enunciate one letter form. Yeah. And I'm sitting here complaining that I can't even read Arabic. Like, so it's just a reminder that like everyone's trying. Everyone's at their own pace. Everyone gets to understand, gets on their journey and knows where they need to go. And it relates back to the comment that you were making about how, you know, if someone is a revert to Islam and someone's trying to find their path and they've been blessed to be called by God to come to the religion, who the hell are these people in the comment section trying to dissuade them from what they know? Because they're like, well, you're, you know, one hair is showing when you're, you know,
yeah,
praying, or I don't even know. Or you're wearing nail polish. It's like the biggest, you know, so I always have to like remind myself about the privileges and the blessings that we have. And it was just something that came to my head. That's why I was saying it.
I agree. Ugh, I feel you. I'm just over it. I'm so tired also.
Oh, okay. By the way, for those of you who didn't hear in the beginning, Layla has been praying Fajr. She's been praying Fajr, which means pretty much every single time I see her, which is every other day, if not every day, at around like noonish, she's ready to pass out. And then around 6, 7 p.m., she's ready to like, you know, become a full comatose zombie.
So, yeah. I'm very in my grandma era. It's quite lovely.
You're in your feminine grandma era.
It's lovely. But anyway, thank you so much for today.
Thank you for having me.
This is a great episode. We're going to be filming again before we travel. We need to like...
Yeah, but you guys need to send the questions.
But babe, it's the same. Like, I love my audience. I do. I love you guys. But it's the same questions.
Alrighty.
Well, we will answer them again. We'll answer a few more next time and next time and next time before we travel. But Sarah has to go. She has to leave me.
Mm-hmm.
She has an event.
I do.
I am going to chill with Besabiso and finish Tarzan. No, I'm not going to finish Tarzan without you.
No, without me.
No, I can't. You can't put the microphone so far away from your mouth. We can't hear you. But anyway, thank you so thank you for today. This was great.
Thank you.
I'm going to edit while you go party.
Okay.
You're not actually partying. She has like a...
I'm trying to. Halal.
Halal.
Yeah. Halal partying.
Anyway, I'm going to edit this.
Okay.
Okay.
Make good choices.
Thanks.
Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
All right.
Live long and prosper.
We need to pray Maghrib.
Okay. Yes, okay. We do. Yalla, yeah. Bye.
Right. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.